You can get a tough chickpea.
You can, but you don't want to smash that down because then that's something...
That's hummus.
That's hummus, isn't it?
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I always think consummate is quite damning.
Consummate,
yeah. He's a consummate broadcaster. It kind of means you're not really good at anything. You could be just about muddled through everything.
Make a fist of it.
Because it's one of those adjectives, isn't it? You would never, ever describe a friend or someone you'd just met. You know, oh, what's Patricia like? Oh, yes, she's consummate.
A consummate what, though?
Yeah, it's a bit strange. Can we just clear something
up,
Jane?
Has this started? Okay, right, this is an email special.
Can I just get something out of the way? Sometimes it's like we're on different planets, isn't it?
You get it out of the way. Go on.
Well, because quite a few people have referred to this, and this particular complaint /whatever comes from Arwen Banning, who says, at the end of every podcast, V laughs at the idea of a woman running a bank.
Oh, this is a long-running saga, this, isn't it?
Yeah. And I always tell the radio, my friend is the CEO at the Bank of Montreal.
Good Lord.
UK PLC based in Dublin.
Oh, based in Dublin, are we? Are there tax advantages?
Very tax-efficient bank, that is. She's a keen listener to your podcast and no doubt tells the radio that she runs a bank at the end of every episode too. Her name is Jane Ann Negi and she went to the same comprehensive school as me in Swansea. That's not all. The person who created Starling Bank is also from Swansea and she went to a comprehensive school here too. In fact, my mum taught her for a short time. So there you go, two women who run banks. So, Arwen, you are by far not the only person who has noted that, but it is a joke. It is meant as a ironic kind of eyebrow raising, because in times past it would have been unheard of for a woman to run a bank or be a bank manager, basically because you weren't allowed to do anything as a woman. You couldn't have a checkbook, you couldn't have a mortgage, you couldn't have a credit card, so you certainly wouldn't be able to do anything other than very, very quickly finger through some £1 notes as a bank teller wearing a plastic thimble. Which is a job that I always really wanted to do.
Oh, yeah. Well, it wasn't as glamorous to me as a bus conductress. They were the people I really, really wanted to ape. But we take the point, but to echo my colleague there, it was intended as a, are we sometimes too clever for our own good?
Well, I think it was just meant as a kind of nod to the vagaries of our equal past, which were very vague indeed. But it's fantastic that women can now run banks. And now I want to move off the subject before I say anything
that makes people annoyed again. Jane. Disappearing down a rather smelly snicket. If it was one of those back alleys, it would smell faintly of urine. So we're going to move
on. Let's come into the light, Jane.
Let's come into the light and bring in Catherine, who has a confession about an act of aggression she carried out. And I think we've been talking a little bit about observing fights and how horrible it can be when you do see this. But this is a slightly lighter note from Catherine, who's written a long email about men on wheels getting on her wick, frankly, whether they're on skateboards or on e-scooters or scrambling bikes, whatever it is, they basically get on her wick. But she does add this fantastic PS. I threw a block of Wensleydale cheese in the direction of a man who wasn't on wheels for a change in a branch of Lidl during one of the lockdowns. Now, in my defence, says Catherine, it was a stressful time and we were supposed to be observing the 2-metre rule. But he was hovering far too close to my other half, who was perusing the loose meats. There's plenty more incidents of me publicly losing my rag, but I've got to go now, she says. Okay. I'm sorry to hear that you did that, Catherine, but you only threw the block in the direction of this irritating man. There's no... You don't say that you hit him.
No, and it's not a can of beans, is
it? It's not a can of beans, although Wensleydale is a quite substantial cheese.
I don't know, it's a crumbly cheese, Jane.
Oh, is it? Would it crumble on impact?
Okay. Break up.
In that case, Catherine, you're forgiven. It's a shame your aim's not a bit better, love. But I think we were all very close to the edge at various points during that time, weren't we?
Yeah, and it did become incredibly difficult, didn't it, to deal with people who were flouting the rules. And especially if you saw someone who was doing it very deliberately, that used to really make my blood boil.
Oh, well, there were some people who really, they took pride in their maverick approach to the rules, didn't they?
Yeah.
And yes, that would also incense me. So I think, Catherine, you've told us about that. We've heard your confessional. And no
more.
We
absolve you.
We do totally absolve you. And as Fee points out, it could have been a much tougher cheese.
But what about a loose meat? How are you defining a loose meat?
I don't know. I think her other half was looking at, well, she says perusing
the loose meats.
Are we talking those spicy things from Spain? And
so the things that are sliced?
Yeah, sliced, but they are packeted, but loose.
But on the loose.
But on the loose in their packet. Who knows? Anyway, when we hear things like that, actually, just reading that PS, it did make me tense. It brought back that weird time, which is still quite close in our sort of muscle memory, but now seems so far away. We have forgotten about 2 metre rules in Lidl.
And groups of five, groups of three, curfews, once a day exercising. Really strange.
Yeah.
So I think our generation will come back to it in our dotage, won't we? I don't think we're really going to investigate it until then. Obviously, lots of other people have much more serious memories involving loss and hardship. But I think if you kind of got through the pandemic, we've parked it, haven't we, in a very dark place in the car park. We're just leaving it there.
Yeah,
I can't remember what I did every day. So we were in the house, me and the kids and all of the pets. So many pets. Barbara disgraced herself this morning, Jim.
I know. Actually, not again.
Oh dear, well,
this is not going well.
No, it's not going well, actually. Yeah, it's not going well.
If you see Barbara being put up for adoption in the next...
Well, she's very attractive.
Somebody would have her, wouldn't they?
Yeah, so somebody would really, really fall for her in the same way that we all did. Although I looked past the floof maloof of her and I looked straight into her eyes and I knew she was going to be trouble.
And so it's proved. Yep. Can I just add a wildlife note, and somebody will be able to respond to this. Snails are everywhere at the moment.
They certainly are.
Now, why is that?
I don't know.
We don't know. And I am finding, and this is very, very sad, but I go out onto the easy grass often to peg out some washing on a lovely sunny day, although the sun appears to have disappeared now. And then I hear that
crunch.
Crunch. Yeah. The underfoot crunch of a now deceased snail.
So presumed it's to do with the temperature, isn't it?
Okay.
Well, it must be, because the only thing that's really changed is the temperature, and it's not solidly raining every day.
Well, so, not at the moment. It will be next week, don't worry.
It's snail and slug season.
Yes, it clearly is. But I think I'm doing the right thing in picking them up from the artificial grass and then placing them onto a leaf or something like that. Is that the kindest thing to do?
I think so.
Yes. You don't know. I'm looking at you as though you might know, but somebody listening will know.
Well, they will definitely be frustrated on the artificial grass, won't they? Because they are creatures of nature, not of plastic.
They can't get any purchase on the
artificial
grass.
They can't at all.
No. Yeah, it makes me sad when I see them.
Now, I'm going to read this out, and you might think, oh, no, what's she gone and done that for? As, you know, the email inbox fills up. But this one is anonymous. Long-time male listener here, a minority, I know. Well, we don't know that. We don't know that. We know that a lot of men are listening.
And non-binary folk.
Yep.
Everyone is welcome.
Some of them are listening for pleasure. Some of them are listening to get annoyed with us. It's been interesting
but
to hear you
way,
talk.
More the merrier, because we're happy either way, aren't we?
Yeah.
You can be as irritated as you like.
Yeah, it's all clickbait to us.
It's all fine for us.
That's what Gwyneth Paltrow says, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, she's right.
Yeah. It's been interesting to hear your talk on open relationships and perhaps the heterosexual view on the subject in stark contrast to gay relationships, where many long-term couples are freely open or often invite others into the bedroom for fun and fun only, without it interfering with the love and relationships we have with our partners, myself included. It's a shame that, and it might just be my view of heterosexual relationships having to follow a stereotype, and I'm very pleased to be gay, where we have a much more relaxed rule book to follow and can make up our own rules as we go along without having to conform to the society norm. Just thought you might like to hear another point of view. Love the show, and secondhand Jane is fab. We'll pass that on
secondhand
to her.
Jane.
But we are not calling Mulkerins secondhand Jane.
I wouldn't dare.
So look,
who's that from?
It's anonymous.
Oh, okay.
And it's stating a point that, that has often been made before, and it gets made quite a lot. But on reading it, I did just think, I'd just like to know a bit more why. And are we all heading in that direction as heterosexuals, where we've got something to learn from the gay community? But I've never really understood that assumption that a gay relationship can have multiple partners for bedroom fun without having the same kind of impact as it might do within a heterosexual relationship. And I don't know why, Jane. And that's all I'm saying.
And it can't always be true either.
No, of course not.
Interesting. Let's throw it open.
Yeah.
As I think our correspondent throws it open quite regularly from the sound of things.
lady, she's on fire.
Well, not really. Jane Fee at times.radio. But I tell you, I'll have a punt at trying to not answer that. But we all know that female sexuality is always judged, and a woman can become a slapper very, very quickly, or be seen by others as a slapper. There are still very few male slappers. So if you've got two men in a relationship who are happy to explore other sexual possibilities, who is there to judge?
Yeah.
Pretty much nobody. Okay. Is that one part?
Yes, I take your point. Yeah, I can see that. But I wonder whether there is something, isn't there, there's something about the female libido not being recognised as being similar to the male libido. I think we know that for a fact.
Up until very recently, it didn't exist at all.
It didn't, no.
It was only discovered, we think, in about 19...
I think it was sanctioned shortly after the chequebook.
I'm not sure. Was it around the same time as you could get a mortgage without asking for your father's permission? or your husband's, or whoever it was.
Yeah.
And now we have got an email about masturbation.
Oh, yes.
And this is from Tim. I am I love the way he describes himself here. I am a time-served fan of your many podcasts, he says, slightly wearily.
It does sound like you've been really worn down.
Come on, Tim. I even listened pre-COVID. Oh, good Lord.
Can I just say to people, just in case you think this is just going to be too much, I've got a very nice piece about kitchen utensils coming up.
Okay,
afterwards.
No, this is very, very short and very simple. this is about masturbation. Right, it's from Tim, and he's actually sending us a letter he saw in the Times a couple of months ago. I thought it might appeal to your listeners, he says. The item speaks for itself, and all credit to the woman in question for drawing attention to her singular pleasure. And this letter in the Times is headlined Singular Pleasures. It's from a lady in Torquay, and she says, further to your coverage of sex and age, I'm in my mid-70s and I'm rampant. I have sex several times a week. Unfortunately, no one else is there. Well, I mean, she's called, her first name's Jennifer, and good for her. So say all of us. And Tim, thank you for drawing us drawing that to our attention. And that is, what do they call Torquay? The something Devon. Is it the Riviera?
I don't know.
I call it something else now, won't they?
I've never been.
Haven't you?
No.
I don't think I have.
Well, we just always went to Scotland, and it was a...
Will there be no masturbation there? You've had your tea. Tim, thank you very much. Now, back to Fiona.
If you're listening in Scotland, I'm so, so sorry. I'm just really, really sorry. Sue is partial to a kitchen gadget.
That's in no way linked with the previous conversation. It's totally different.
It's really not. But I just want... So we have heard from Sue before because she was on holiday. Do you remember? She was on holiday in Spain and she had purchased a microplane nutmeg grater, 4-bag closure clips and a small green funnel. Yes. And she was considering a jar opener with silicone gripper pads. But I just really... I'm going to take a photograph of her little collection, which she's very, very handy. She put a tape measure down the bottom so we can see exactly how big or small these things are.
Oh, yeah.
And she went on, she emailed us again to say that she was making a somewhat impulsive investment in a rotating meat tenderizer.
Oh,
I know. And I'm just going to, just so you know, it'll be up on the Insta. And I do love a kitchen gadget myself, and I think Jane does too. So if we can get something started, then I would very much like to see some little pictures from people's kitchen drawers of the strangest thing you've got.
Yeah, or anyone's just prepared to share their terrible drawer, because we've all got one.
Oh, gosh.
An image of, you know, that drawer.
That one.
That's full of yuck.
Yeah.
Two batteries, several elastic bands with bits of guff sticking to them.
Blue tack that is...
A ball of blue tack that's
neither
grey.
Neither blue nor tacky.
Yeah. Exactly. Maybe some string. We've all got one of those. What is a meat tenderizer?
Well, I think it's this one here.
No, but what does it do?
Oh, so you're going to be bashing it across the... Bless you.
Young people today.
Across a chicken breast in order to flatten it out to make it into an escalope. Maybe you're tenderising your steak so it can take a marinade better. I think you're breaking down the tough fibres.
Oh, the tendons.
Yes.
Oh God, it's enough to turn anyone vegetarian, isn't it, when you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, I've encountered some aubergines that could do with a bit of tenderising too.
Yeah, you can get a tough chickpea.
You can, but you don't want to smash that down because then that's something...
That's hummus.
It's hummus, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so we'll put this up and we'll see where we get. Why do I call that drawer the man drawer? Does anyone else call it the man drawer? Is it just because it's very, very messy?
Fee, you've got into trouble before for keeping men in drawers. it was very awkward. She did serve us a short sentence.
I don't know.
And this is part of her...
rehabilitation.
Yeah.
Working with you. It's community service.
Kind of.
Yes, learning a lot.
Well, you probably are.
I know, I am.
And this is a very lovely email from Sue, and I wanted to mention it because it's by way of total contrast to everything else we've talked about. It's something that's happening this weekend. I think it's an absolutely lovely thing for daughters, in this case, to do for their fathers. And Sue says, I hope you can give us a brief mention. There are some very significant 80th World War II anniversaries coming up in the next couple of weeks. We are the daughters of three veterans, and we're members of the Monte Cassino Society, travelling to Italy this weekend coming up and into next week with a group of 40 others to mark the 80th anniversary of Monte Cassino. Once we return, the focus will shift to the 80th anniversary of D-Day and the Italian campaign will be somewhat forgotten. So you're absolutely right. I'm afraid my ignorance here was pretty colossal, but I did look it up and it was 1944, obviously, the Battle of Monte Cassino. 55,000 Allied casualties in that battle. It was actually a series of four military operations by the Allies against the German forces in Italy. And you can just imagine, you can't, actually neither of us can imagine how dreadful that must have been for some of the people who were there at the time. But how lovely that you are still going out there and doing something about it. And as Sue says, the service of remembrance will be personal and poignant. Our standard bearer will be there. There'll be a wreath laid and a bugler. And as members of the Monte Cassino Society go into the cemetery, they will decide then whom they would like to remember. They will photograph the headstone and have the details to hand when it comes to the roll of honour. And then the name of the person selected will be called out. So I just
think
that's
lovely.
It is lovely. Yeah. And it is. I mean, I'm afraid Sue is right. If you asked most of us, what do you know about the Italian campaign in World War II, I'm afraid it would be pretty much nothing.
Pretty much nothing, very little indeed. Yeah.
So, Sue, I hope the trip goes well. And I know there are other women involved, all of whom are celebrating and commemorating the sacrifices of their dads. And they are Helen and Leslie and Sue, who wrote the email.
Well, so, that is lovely.
Yeah, have a really, well, is good time appropriate, but I hope the whole thing goes well. I think it's a really beautiful thing to be doing.
So that's so striking as well, isn't it, Jane? Because I wonder whether or not the families of those who've lost their loved ones in more recent conflicts are even able to make journeys back to where those usually young men and women have died. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, if you had lost your son or daughter or husband, brother or whatever, or wife in Iraq or Afghanistan, can you make a trip back there to feel closer to them? I know that there aren't.
I doubt you can. I'm sure you can't.
No. I mean, I know that, you know, their bodies would have been repatriated. They would have been buried with a military ceremony here. But sometimes it's immensely comforting, isn't it, to go back to where somebody was last alive, actually. And I don't know whether you would be able to do that. You know the address if you'd like to inform us more about that. This one comes from Please Only Use My First Name. Not even going to do that because it might still mean that you can be identified. Following on from our email a couple of days ago, we moved to Vancouver, Canada in 2002. This is about what you miss when you move abroad. We'd always wanted to go to the States, but I could never get a job there. But then my husband's cousin said he was moving to Vancouver from New York, so we went for a month to see if we liked it. We did, so we applied for visas and got it within 6 months, so sold up and went. However, our daughters are all grown up now, and I find it so boring here. I really miss all the things and places you can visit in England. I've got a long list on my phone that I add to when I think of them. And this is just a little selection. National Trust Houses, Winchester, Chichester, Highclere Castle, afternoon teas, gorgeous hotels, bar days, Sunday pub lunches, the New Forest, London! Close to Europe. The Chelsea Flowers Show, London again, 3! Longleat, etc.
Longleat.
Yeah.
Well, that's where the Postman Pat Village was, of course. Oh, dear. OK. But there must be some wonderful, wonderful things to do.
Well, maybe you've done them. And maybe you just have that hankering for your own
affinity. You need to go to London once, don't you? Once is enough.
I thought that just made me laugh out loud, just because also the idea that suddenly something would come to you and you'd add it, you'd actually have a list on your phone that went, you know, things that I really, really miss about my homeland, and you add to it. And obviously London has come up quite a few times. I wonder whether anybody else has got a similar thing. We are going to do this one towards the end of the podcast, but I'm just going to cross out the name of the person that will be. Okay. I'm going to anonymise that while you do your next couple of emails.
All right. Well, we often talk about the challenges of parenthood. And indeed, we had a lot of emails relatively recently about how difficult birth can be. But sometimes really good stuff happens. And I wanted to mention this from a listener who says, my first baby was born via a planned home birth last summer, and it was a wonderful experience. We had a pool. The midwife came over as things really got going in the evening. And my daughter was born in the water in the early hours of the morning. I know that positive birth stories are invaluable from my own experiences of preparing for birth, and I think there should be more mainstream discussion of this. I also thought I would find motherhood lonely and isolating, but so far it has been quite the opposite. I've made loads of friends, and I have a full schedule of social and baby events. Even with the sleepless nights and the tough teething episodes, it has probably been one of the happiest periods of my life. In fact, the hardest thing now is the prospect of having to go back to work. While many in my workplace work compressed hours, my employer has suggested it will be tough around nursery pickups, etc., and they would want me to try compressed hours on a trial basis for a few months to see if I can cope with the longer days. So it sort of feels like I'll be returning on probation. I must admit, I haven't heard of this. Have you heard of this?
Compressed hours.
Compressed hours, no. It's interesting, and it sounds to me as though, I mean, our correspondent says, before I went on maternity leave, my male boss gave me feedback that I could look like I'm enjoying myself a bit more, which was quite challenging while suffering pelvic girdle pain in the third trimester.
Oh, that's so painful. That's
is it?
Really, yeah. Really painful, yeah.
Anyway, she goes on to say, so it feels like if I don't have a sunny disposition on my return to work, it might not be a success. Okay, well, that started off very positive, and now we hear that actually your return to work might be a little tricky. It is interesting that your male boss took issue with... Do you think there's an expectation that women are supposed to be really cheerful all the time, whereas maybe men, it's not, the pressure isn't... You don't have to look as though you're, quotes, enjoying yourself at work.
Yeah, I'm sure that exists.
Yeah, it's funny though, isn't
and
it?
And I think the expression, cheer up, love...
Yeah, of course, yeah.
...is only directed at women, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think sour-faced or dour-faced men are often, you know, they're...
Well, they're deep thinkers.
Exactly, I was just about to say, they're lost in thought,
aren't they? Oh, very much so, yes.
The process of their mind.
Strong but silent.
If only they were.
Well, to our anonymous correspondent, let us know how your return to work when it comes goes. But I must admit, compressed days or hours are new to me.
Yeah.
And
also, I think that return to work is so, it's so difficult. You go back into a world that you knew, but I think you go back as a very different person. And it's not always a particularly... easy thing to do. I think your mind is inevitably for the first couple of weeks, months, even years with your baby. I think you can feel a little bit guilty if you actually just really enjoy going to work. There's all kinds of stuff that goes down and you can't really talk about it that much at work because you're at work.
Yeah.
And you're not meant to. So will you keep in touch with us? But also, how lovely to have had a blast of maternal joy.
Oh, brilliant.
As well.
Yeah, fantastic.
And there's so much to be said, actually, for just really amplifying that message as well as the reality of how difficult it is. Because I know lots of women, Jane, who really, you know, really loved and hated those early years of babyhood and childhood in equal measure and found both things sometimes quite hard to express. And certainly one of the loveliest things I found was just meeting completely different people who have remained and always will remain some of my closest friends. I met a different type of woman, actually. No, don't look at me like that.
I don't know what to say. A different type of...
No, I did, though. I did. I think lots of people do, because you just... You start to exist in a completely different environment with people that you just would never have otherwise met. So, and they are absolutely lovely.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This one is from Stephanie. Listening to yesterday's podcast and the mention of Persil and Ajax, both of which figured large in my childhood, jogged a memory of another product, Vim. Do you remember Vim?
Oh, I do remember Vim.
Vim scouring powder, which Mum used to scrub the bath. Mum was a typical Tupperware queen and decanted everything possible into suitable containers, Now, look, this is a little bit like the guy who's mending his own conservatory at the beginning of Casualty.
Yeah.
We know something's going to go wrong,
Don't
Jane.
Don't do it.
It led to an unfortunate bath time incident for seven-year-old me. Post-bath, I towel dried and then sprinkled myself liberally from the Tupperware container of talcum powder, except, of course, I'd picked up the Vim. I was in big trouble, and wait for this bit, because the immersion heater had to go back on so I could dunk myself and remove the scratchy powder.
Oh, yeah. Well, putting the immersion on was a... It had to be... You had to go through weeks of negotiation.
Can I put the immersion on?
Yeah, this will... some of our audience just simply won't understand what that is. But I have an immersion. Do you have one now? It's for use just in case everything goes belly up.
Yes, I do. I've got an emergency tank.
There
You're
we are.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. Yes, join us here in paradise. this is from Gail. I'm just going to do more of these. I love the podcast. I always listen on my dog walks and I often laugh out loud. I know a lot of people are listening on dog walks, which sometimes worries me because it makes me think that we might be talking at the same time as somebody has just put their hand inside one of those tiny poo bags and they're just putting it round
lifting up a warm one.
Exactly. And that makes me feel a bit sick. But nevertheless, you are welcome. I am, says Gail, mum to three girls, 24, 21 and 15. My husband and I started a building design company together over 30 years ago. And when we had the kids, we made the decision and I happily agreed that I would take on the role of primary caregiver. Recently, during a conversation with my daughters, I was taken aback. They just simply didn't realise I'd worked at all when they were young. It was surprising to me, but upon reflection, I understood why. Despite juggling countless responsibilities, ranging from dropping them off at school to picking them up, managing their schedules, tending to the puppy and keeping our business afloat, I was just mum to them. They simply didn't see behind the scenes and the total chaos I had to navigate between the hours of 08:45 and 2:45 p.m. Whilst I wouldn't trade those moments for anything, it did make me pause and consider if I should have been more vocal about my responsibilities. I always believed I was setting a good example. You can have a career and a family, right? But it seems my daughters didn't fully grasp the extent of my efforts. I'm curious, says Gail, how do you and your listeners manage the balancing act of work and parenting? Gail is from Birkenhead, she says. Right, so Birkenhead Park, of course.
How do you manage that? Do you draw attention to the fact that you work and therefore the other stuff that you do in the house is also work, but you've already worked?
Yeah, I think I do now. Yes, because astonishingly, I'm often... almost always, expected to provide a meal when I have also been out working. When the children do work, I mean, the student will be working in the summer. She'll have to. She may not know that yet, by the way, but I'm...
Does she listen?
I very much doubt it, Fiona. yes, she does. There's no bigger fan of her mother's work. but they will still... I mean, sometimes I say, look, I'm out, you know, I'm going out. But it is interesting that it's naturally a role that falls to me. I mean, they've never bought a toilet roll in their lives, ever, unless they're away at uni, I suppose.
What are they using?
Yes, because I'm not buying it. It's funny, isn't it? It's made me think, actually, Gail. Should we all make more of a song and dance about what we're expected to do? Or... You see, I sometimes take the view that the domestic load might fall to my children because they're female. So whilst they're living at home, I'm prepared to take the slack.
Okay,
do
interesting.
It for, but that's a really stupid way of thinking.
Yeah.
Actually.
Do you know what? Maybe, I've got a boy and a girl, and I am so keen not to send out a man into the world who can't manage the domestic. I just think on every level, it's wrong. I don't want that to happen. So we have quite a open conversation about doing the washing and loading a dishwasher and all of that kind of stuff. And I'm sure that I huff and puff quite a bit about working full-time now, but I didn't work full-time when the kids were young. And I did do that thing, which I think, you know, Gail is referring to as well, where I never really wanted the kids to feel that I wasn't there for them. So I didn't really talk about my work. I didn't want them to think that there wasn't somebody who was kind of there as backup. And maybe that's had a greater impression on them than the later years now, which are, you know, quite full of... We're all on the same wheel at the moment, actually, because they're working very hard for their exams. I'm coming to work. They're working harder than me, Jane. I would accept that.
Yeah.
But it's quite a nice routine. I think we all feel that we're doing stuff in the house and stuff outside the house. But I know it's a more conscious process with my son than my daughter, so I need to check in with myself about that.
You see, I don't know how I'd have... Would I have... You see, I suspect if I'd had two boys rather than two girls, I might be doing far less for them. Out of a desire to spread the word that I wasn't some sort of servant.
Yes.
But yeah. I don't know, girl. I'll
oh,
never
this
know.
Is interesting. So, yeah. Yes, we would love to hear thoughts about that. Honest thoughts as well, always hugely appreciated. Jackie says, I just listened to your podcast with the poor woman who had to leave with nothing. So we were talking about the difference between divorce and cohabiting and the kind of collateral damage afterwards. And Jackie says, my partner and I drew up a living together agreement to protect ourselves and our children, including who had contributed to what and what should happen with the house if we were to split up or one of us died. Thoroughly recommend.
So is that a legal document that...
It must be.
Right, and it's called?
A living together agreement.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're going to delve into this with an expert as well, because we've had quite a few very differing emails, actually. So we do need to make it... we need to get a bit more detailed, don't we?
And it's different in Scotland.
Yeah.
And there must be all sorts of different rules in North America, and our Canadian listeners will tell us what goes on. I don't know what goes on there. Australia. It's presumably all completely different, the degree of protection you get, depending on your so-called marital status.
Yeah.
Anyway, much more to deal with there, much more to explore. And thank you, by the way, for all the great emails about book suggestions for the next book club.
Oh, we've yes, really no, those good look ones. Good.
Yeah, those they really good. Do. But that's not what this podcast is about. This listener has had another irritating encounter with a young man. She was standing at a pedestrian crossing waiting for the green light when she became aware that a young male of the species was cycling on the pavement towards me. The place where I was standing was too narrow for him to get round me, and I wasn't going to move, so I stood my ground and pretended not to notice him. Well, he drew up just a few feet away from me and addressed me very rudely, saying, "Oi, granny." I ignored him completely and continued looking straight ahead across the road. He pulled closer, this time shouted, "Oi, granny!" I remained immobile for a few more seconds, and then, summoning as much energy and volume as I could, I turned on him and I emitted the loudest and fiercest leonine roar I could muster. Is that the right pronunciation?
Nice word.
Thank you. Well, I don't know whether I can actually do justice to this, but it was basically like that. The poor lamb was so utterly shocked and petrified he fell off his bike, much to the hilarity of a couple of passing pedestrians who'd witnessed the whole incident. I hasten to add the only injury sustained was to his pride. He really did look like a 24-carat prat. However, I doubtless need to seek absolution for my unholy glee, as I have so far omitted to mention the fact that I am a Church of England vicar.
Ooh, ah. I liked your roar.
Did you?
I did.
Yes, I wonder whether there might be a little sideline for me somewhere.
No. This one comes from Sue. Hello, Sue from Denmark here. Hello, Sue from Denmark, our Danish correspondent. Just a speedy email to tell you two of my favourite comebacks when people are rude. As a tall woman who likes to wear heels, I used to get tired of small men saying, "Hey, what's the weather like up there?" So I would spit on them and say, "It's raining." In the 1980s, I worked on a huge American trading floor with approximately 2,000 men. The level of banter was off the scale, but if you could handle yourself, it could be hilarious. The best response I ever heard of was when a female employee was teased by one of the male traders. "Oh, darling, I'd love to get in your knickers." She paused, pulled her trouser waistband out a little, pretended to look at her underwear and said, "Oh, sweetheart, I think one arsehole in here is enough."
Okay.
It still goes down as the best comeback ever. And actually, Sue says, I used a much ruder word, but I'm not sure it's broadcastable. I don't know what that would be. Well, actually, no, we do. We do.
And oh, we're women of the world, aren't we?
Yeah, already. This email special would not be heard in Dubai. In my estimation, it was the best comeback
ever. Hang on, is that true?
And thought it would give you a laugh. Yeah, explicit lyrics don't get through in certain countries.
Okay.
Yep. So that's why we're big in Canada.
Big in the Commonwealth.
It's a liberated country.
But not as big as we'd like to be in Dubai.
No. Can we just say a huge thank you to Claire in Bristol, who took the time to actually send us a card and write us a letter. And I'm glad that we keep you company. I hope you're doing okay, actually. And I always think, and I'm pretty sure that the Garvey feels the same way, that you are never alone if you've got the radio and you've got podcasts. And it's kind of the whole point of it all, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm very glad that you've found us, and I hope you can keep listening to us and stay well. And also thank you for the very thoughtful Lido card, which is beautiful.
It's a beautiful card.
I'm going to put it up on my desk in front of the picture of Barbara, who I don't want to look at today.
No. It does make me laugh that I said to Fee yesterday that everything we do, and we have some quite serious conversations in the office about, you know, the Middle East and how we should cover certain things, and the whole time these very earnest conversations are going on, Barbara is glowering from her framed portrait. I mean, she's an incontinent fluffball. I mean, it's absolutely outrageous. Anyway, but it is, Claire, thank you for the card. And it is, although emails are wonderful, there's something about a card in the post.
Oh, it's lovely.
Yeah.
It's just so thoughtful.
It's really lovely.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. Right. We mentioned Paddington, and this is from a listener who says, probably quite rarely, her 11-year-old daughter has got a phobia of Paddington. So I'm sorry about that. She was taken to the cinema to see the not-to-be-mentioned bear as a very little girl and was so frightened that she curled up on her cousin's lap and shook herself into a kind of cataclysmic protective coma.
Oh, my word.
I know. So ever since, she's developed a genuine phobia of Paddington. This can... Matarif.
Eve's writing that down.
It's too much for the snowflakes, this sort of thing. This makes walking through pretty much every London station mildly problematic, as they all seem to sell the bears at the newsagents.
Well, you can't go to Hamleys either.
Well, you can't go to the station in the West.
No,
would be completely... I wonder if there is a name for this phobia or if anybody else suffers from it. Well, I'm genuinely sorry to hear about that, because it made me think about my first ever trip to the cinema was to see Fantasia. Do you remember that Disney film?
No, I
okay.
don't.
Well, it was incredibly unsuccessful because I ran out screaming because there was a scene involving some cartoon singing mops. It sounds idiotic. But I just ran screaming for the exit and didn't go to the cinema again for several years afterwards. So I'm very sorry for our correspondent's daughter, and I just want to say I've been there, and it's no joke.
No, okay.
No.
But you've got over that, because actually you're...
Well, you're happiest
in a domestic shopping environment.
I'm the proud owner of a mop, although I don't have a meat tenderiser.
No, well, it's only a matter of time. Your 60th's coming up, I know what to get you now.
Oh, God.
Right, this is going to be the last email from me, and I am not going to mention the name or too many identifying features here, and it is just delightful. Back in 2000, this comes from Joanna, I appeared in an episode of a short-lived television programme. The idea of the programme was that a celebrity chef would arrive at the home of an ordinary person and, with no forewarning at all, would cleverly rustle up a delicious three-course meal using whatever he happened to find in the cupboards and fridge. Needless to say, it wasn't spontaneous at all, because I had to equip them well in advance with a full and detailed itemised list of what he would happen upon when he got there. On the morning of the filming, I waited slightly nervously, looking out of the window for the camera crew and the chef to arrive. At this point, I didn't know which chef I'd get. To be honest, I hadn't heard of any of them. Up rolled presenter Plonker, and I stood observing him from a window. He took out a can of hairspray and spent a surprising amount of time checking, spraying and primping. So it's not Greg Wallace, is it? He checked his coiffure in both the rear view and driver's side wing mirror before heading on over to the front door to meet me. After receiving a full guided tour of my store cupboard and fridge, we prepared for filming. At the time, we had a small rescue dog called Woody, who had a bad eye problem, and we were saving up for an operation. There was a large glass jar on the kitchen shelf with a label on it, which read Woody's Eye Operation Fund. Once filming started, presenter Plonker asked me about this jar, and I was able to explain Woody's sorry story. On camera, he took £20 out of his wallet and dropped it into the jar. So kind and touching. Lovely. The morning progressed, and together we spontaneously created a three-course meal. Clever old him. My husband was called through to try out the lovely dishes and then off they all went. But here's the thing. Just before they all swept back out of the house, presenter Plonka swapped the £20 note for Woody's iFund for a fiver. No words.
Showbiz heart of gold. Just too sad.
It is, isn't it?
Shattered.
I hope Woody was all right.
I do too.
Also, what an absolute git.
What an arsehole. I think Fee mentioned earlier in the week, I think it might have been the morning after the ARIAs, the Radio Industry Awards of the night before, that we had met some very lovely listeners at the function. And Rach and Beck were the people we wanted to mention. This is actually from Rach, who says, could you please give Beck a birthday shout-out on air? She'd be so chuffed. She's a lovely sister who's raising my two small nephews, her children, really beautifully. As you've been saying in the programme, it is a privilege to be able to grow old, and we get to have been alongside each other for the last 45 years. We are so lucky. We have a long-running discussion, I'm correct and she's wrong, about which twin is older, because Beck was born first, says Rach. However, in some cultures, and I didn't know this, the second-born twin is considered the oldest. Now, this is because, according to Rach's email, the older one is higher and deeper in the womb, so must have been there longer. So the first one born is actually younger, and the second born is older. So I think it's another win for me, she says. I spent many years living in Central Australia with Aboriginal communities. Me and Beck were separated by many miles for many years, and because of the time difference, I was ahead of her by 12 hours for a total of 17 birthdays. To me, this totally means I am the oldest now. I'm not sure whether that's... I'm now terribly confused by all the maths here. But to Rach and to Beck, a very happy 45th. I would say you're nearing your peak, but you're not at it, are you, at 45?
But I think that's very logical, the twin that's higher up has maybe been there for longer, unless you've all twisted around.
I was
going to
say,
pregnancy.
In the birth process, there might be some jostling for position within the womb.
Well, it sounds like there's still a bit of jostling going on.
Yeah, well, listen, we all know about sibling jostling.
Yeah.
It's the jostling that never ends. to you both, a very happy... I think 45 is a great, great age, and I really mean that. I'm rather jealous of people who are 45.
I had a terrible 45.
Apart from when Fee was 45.
It's my worst
ever.
So if you're having a really terrible 45, then I'm with you. But if you're having a great 45, you're with Jane.
No, actually, I've just gone, I had a shit 45. I know exactly. Just forget that. Anyway, 46 is a really brilliant birthday. I do remember exactly what. Anyway, right. Thank you very much for listening. Some of you have taken part and we're very grateful.
Yeah, it's just such a fantastic thing. When we came to Times Radio and we started doing the podcast again, I think both Jane and I were a little bit uncertain about what would happen. And you have surpassed our expectations for your hive mind, for your sense of humour, for all the topics that you embrace. I just think it's fabulous. So please don't stop.
No, don't stop. And sometimes we're completely wrong. And
Often.
Yeah, and we do read emails and we hear you. Okay, so we're not booking Neil Ferguson again for a while. Right.
But you did well. So just to big you up, you have had lots of emails saying that you did put in the right challenges.
Well, ish. Not easy. But then who is? We've got some great guests coming up next week. We've had some great guests this week. Janie Godley, we had Martin Freeman. Who else have we had this week? Oh, and we've got a really good one next week, a female traveller, who I think people are going to really enjoy hearing from. And you know how intrepid I am.
Yeah, I'm going to enjoy hearing that too. And next week, we've got Elizabeth Hurley.
I tell you what. Right. Have a good couple of days and we'll see you next week. She said, this is like a radio wink. It's a podcast.
A little wink.
I'll see you next week.
Good night.
Tomorrow.
Stay classy, Seattle.
Well done for getting to the end of another episode of Off Air with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover. Our Times radio producer is Rosie Cutler, and the podcast executive producer is Henry Tribe. And don't forget, there is even more of us every afternoon on Times Radio. It's Monday to Thursday, 3 till 5. You can pop us on when you're pottering around the house or heading out in the car on the school run.
Or running a bank. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you can join us again on Off Air very soon.
Don't be so silly.
Running a bank?
I know, ladies.
A lady listener.
I'm sorry.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.